We're live.
For the last 15 years, I've worked with all kinds of content management systems, proprietary, open source, and custom in PHP, Java, ASP, .NET, and even Cold Fusion. I've had clients that were Fortune 500 enterprises and higher ed, nonprofits, startups, and friends. About 8 years ago, I focused on open source and started investing significant time in the Drupal and WordPress communities, building sites, contributing modules, speaking at camps, etc. That led to starting WordCamp Boston back in 2009. And eventually, through a number of twists and turns, to my current gig as CEO at 10Up, a fantastic company embedded in an incredible community. WordPress is on a mission to democratize publishing. 10Up is on a mission, too, to make content management easy and maybe even fun. That means we get to work with big brands and cool clients, but we also get to help build the core platform along the way. Whatever your role in the WordPress community might be, thanks for being part of it. We really are changing the world for the better. I'm John Ekman, and the Dradcast starts now.
From the bowels of WordPress Nation, it's
you know what time it is.
All operators are busy at this time.
For the Dradcast, here to talk WordPress news. Show weekly, we bring you your favorite Santan alumnus, Brad Williams and Dre Armada. Sit back, folks, grab something to sip on, and get ready to press on. The Dradcast starts now.
Oh, that's right. We're pressing. We're sipping. We're back with Dradcast episode 6-6. Dre, what is up, buddy? It feels like ever since you were sitting right here next to me that long ago.
It feels like years, my friend. I've aged. I've grayed my beard. This is nuts. And we're two-thirds of the way to the centennial mark, man. This is pretty damn cool. I would say that's a feat in itself. How are you?
Great episode in person last time. I'm very excited about tonight's episode. We have a great guest, which we'll talk about. There's just been a lot going on really recently. Sometimes we're those weeks, so we probably should not drag it out too much longer. We have Mr. John Ekman. He's previously the managing director at iSight Design. He's had a long, rich history working at various companies. Currently, he is a CEO at 10Up. I've known John for a few years now, specifically around the boss. Extremely excited to have him on the show.
Thanks. I'm super excited to be here. I'm getting a little bit of lag on your video, Brad. I don't know if it's...
I'm a laggy kind of guy, so we'll roll with
it. For your personality. I thought it was technical.
I like to chop and act like I'm laggy. Even in real life, I kind of...
Hey, man, why are you lagging?
I'm going through a bridge.
I'll call you back. I promise. Good old Google Hangout. We'll power through it. As long as the audio is there, cool. It should be good. But, John, we're very excited to have you on the show. We've known each other for a while. I know you're big into podcasts, and I'm glad we could work it out and get into it. So we have a lot to talk about. I'm excited to learn about your history. Before we get to that, the most important thing we're going to talk about tonight is I need to know what you guys are sipping on.
Hey, what you sipping on?
Man, I just want to dance some more, man. Can we run that back one more time?
We got the best. This show has the best tunes in the business. I'm telling you.
We have. If our bumpers are what really make this show.
I know.
Yeah, it's really. Yeah.
We're totally secondary.
Remove us, and it'll run on its own. Gosh. No, it probably wouldn't run. So, John, what are you sipping on over there?
So I am sipping on an Angry Orchard hard cider.
Oh, yeah.
Decided. I'm a big fan of like a dark imperial stout, but I feel like on a work night that's a little too heavy, so a little hard cider is easier on the
everything.
Oh, yeah. John, you know, drink as much as you want, John. It's all good, man. It's not like everything important to you tomorrow. It's all good.
It's always after five somewhere, right?
All right. Well, I got a little something dark and warming my belly. This is my favorite right now, Captain Morgan Private Stock. It's a good winter drink. It's a good all-around drink, but it's especially good in the winter, so warm you right up.
Oh, yeah. I'm back on the wagon. It is training season, my friends. So you know what ends up happening to me for a long time throughout the year? I've got girls softball. My girls play, so I'm out there on the fields. I don't get to train, and I start to slip a little bit. That's over with. Championship Sunday, my daughter Hannah took home the gold championship. I am back on the water. Because I am back on the mats as of last night, and we're going to start crushing. We got a tournament coming up in January, so let's get it.
Yes, water. I'm excited. So gold medal all the way, right? Now that you're in the new bracket, you're in the blue belt.
Yes, sir.
You're
so
not beat it in. So we're definitely will keep track of your progress. Wish you the best of luck there.
Thank you, sir.
Always like to
start a Dre Jiu-Jitsu Twitter just for that.
In fact, if you go to drejitsu.com, you might find something that you might like.
Should have known you'd be one step ahead of me.
Of course, well, there's an entire
not only blogging about my journey, but there's some fight gear coming out. I'm just throwing it out there. Discounts to all the Dragcast listeners out there. You're good to go.
And an affiliate link, too. Look at that.
Yeah. To my new book. This is too much.
Oh, man.
The wheels fell off quick, guys.
Jiu-Jitsu. The wheels fell off before they ever started, but that's how we do it here, so... We got to get into it. We got to learn all about John. So, John, I mean, we know you from the WordPress world, right? We know you from TinUp. You're CEO of TinUp. We'll definitely get into that. I've known you from kind of the Boston area WordPress community, which we were talking about before the show. Great community. Hate your sports teams, but you guys and gals are all great people. So I can't hate you that much. But I want to hear way before that. I want to hear back when John first got excited about the web. What was your first kind of dive into the web? Where did you really start tinkering around and think maybe there's something to this?
So I'm old enough to have been excited about the internet before the web, which, you know, I know some of your guests you've had on started a bit sooner, more recently, but so I was an academic. I went direct from undergrad into grad school, and so I was in graduate school in Seattle in the mid-90s, and started out just with Telnet and MUDS and Moose and Archie and Gopher and all that kind of information retrieval stuff. I was teaching in a networked classroom and wanted a way for my students to interact with each other. So when this web thing came out, I was like, this is fantastic, right? I had a web page up in 1995. And I remember when you used to be able to get the email from CERN that would list all the known web servers in the world, right? And you'd be so excited when one more went up and you could go see what was on it.
That's taking it way back.
I mean, that was, you could say that was kind of the turning point in my career away from academia and into web development, really. I taught myself Perl and CGI Bin because that was how you made things work, right? That was the only option. I've talked about it before as sort of it was open source before even there was really open source. It was just academic communities that shared with each other. So you know, somebody would write something cool in Perl and they would post it and let everybody see it, and you'd copy it and make something of your own. So come sort of late 90s, I had defended my dissertation. I was on the job market. I was trying to get a job as an instructor. Worst year in, I think, recorded history in terms of newly minted humanities PhDs and jobs, right? Like, there are 4,000 applicants for every job I apply for. Most of them have 3 books published and have been teaching for 10 years, and, you know, I just, that was not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So I kind of realized I'm banging my head against this brick wall to try to get a job teaching when this thing I do in my spare time, which is build websites for local companies and for my friends and for whatever, and, you know, I'm reading Wired and Fast Company all weekend and geeking out about cool computer stuff. That, meanwhile, is exploding, right? We're in Seattle near Amazon, and, like, anybody with a pulse can get a job in technology, and it's taking off.
Good spot for technology in that time frame. There are probably only a couple tech hubs, really, in the United States. Seattle, you know, Silicon Valley, New York, but it was, I mean, there weren't many. There weren't many back then.
My wife and I moved back to Boston circa 2000. I said, I'm going to give this a couple of years. Started at a little web development shop called T-Visions at the time, which had built the first Fidelity.com. They had to actually carry a machine into Fidelity to show them the website because they didn't have connectivity in the offices yet. Like, that was before me, but this was the firm that I joined. And I said, you know, I'll give it a year and see how it goes. And that was, you know, 16 years ago, and I've never looked back. So kind of made the switch into full-time focus on web development, and over that last 15 years, I've, like I said in my intro, I've kind of worked with a lot of different platforms and a lot of different stuff, but ultimately came back to open source as the thing that was that really motivated me and felt comfortable to me because it was the community as well as the software.
Yeah, it's funny that, like, your career path through school had little to do with what you're doing now, if I'm understanding.
Virtually
nothing. And this is a story I've heard before, I think we all have, where you kind of go through school, and, like, websites, web development, web anything is kind of a hobby. It's something people are tinkering with and enjoying, and then they're like, you know what, this, you know, my degrees, my career path is not panning out, like you said. Tough to get a job, whatever it is. Hey, maybe I'll see if I can take this hobby and something a little more professional. And a lot of people, I think, have gone down that road very successfully, like yourself.
I think the web in general totally attracted just kind of a motley crew of people from all kinds of different backgrounds. I know, as someone who's hired a lot of people over the last 15 years, you know, having a broader vision that lets you accept people with different backgrounds, that doesn't just say you got to come in with a comp sci degree and you got to have this kind of credential, has absolutely been a strength for the web. It's enabled us to bring in a lot of smart people that, you know, are really excited about the content and about the opportunity. And they're not just there for a job. They're really there because they find it exciting. And I think that's really helped us. And all the great, all the best coders I've ever hired have been musicians, right? I mean, that's just, there's something about kind of that way of thinking.
That's very true. You know, reading, writing music. I've read some, I'm sure you have too, I've read some various articles online where they're really trying to push teaching programming in school, just like they are teaching music in school very early on, because it gets that kind of critical thinking going from an early age. A lot of overlap there between music and programming. That's really cool that you say that.
So I always tell people, like, I left teaching, but you know, a lot of what I do as a manager of any kind or as a leader of an organization is a lot like teaching. It's a lot of knowing how to read the room and who's paying attention and who's not and who secretly disagrees with you but is afraid to say it out loud. And, you know, it's a lot of consulting is kind of that way. Yeah. And managing people is all about getting them to figure out what they're, how smart they are and what they're capable of.
Yeah.
Sure, Dre, in jiu-jitsu, it's the same kind of thing. Like your coach or sensei or whatever you call them is partially there to help you figure out what you're capable of.
Certainly.
It's not so much that they're just, you know, teaching you technique or whatever. It's partially about inspiring you and getting you motivated. And I think leading a company is much the same way.
Partially there to also kick Dre's ass on a daily basis, I think, right? Like that's
and they're pretty damn good at it. I'm just saying. They whip the hell out of me.
Sometimes it helps us to remember what we don't know. Yeah.
Oh, it's absolutely humbling, but at the same time, it's part of the journey, right? Mm-hmm. That whooping that you take, it helps you appreciate when you get into that technique, to the step where you move beyond getting your ass whooped anymore, right? At that point, you start becoming the guy that's handing those out. But you need some motivation to get you past that. If you're not, if you're not following it. Yeah, go ahead there, Bradford.
No, I was gonna kind of build on your point there. Interesting enough that you say that, because it's very similar to kind of learning technology or learning a trait, where you start as the question asker, and then if you know over time you eventually turn into the question answerer. You know, and I think this is the way a lot of us have learned, especially in the open source world. We're just in there trying to figure stuff out and asking for help and reading tutorials, and eventually there's that kind of shift of I'm trying to learn stuff to I'm actually want to help people. Right.
And I think you find out that by teaching you learn, right? I mean, it's kind of a cliche, but it really is true that you get to this point where it's
definitely,
yes, you have things to teach, but at the same time, there's so much more that you learn from that experience. And that was what I loved about teaching, and that's what I love now about being in the open source world, is sort of, I always know there's somebody smarter than me, so I may have things to teach, but I also have a lot to learn, and kind of being in that position is fantastic.
But isn't that part of the goal, of leading a group that you're trying to grow and succeed? Your goal is to really push them to the point of succeeding beyond your potential, right? If you're training people to be better than you, then you're doing what you need to build a successful business.
Absolutely. Your job is to continually try to make yourself replaceable and irrelevant, right? And it never quite happens, but you're always trying to train people that work for you to be able to do what you've done. And they'll do it in different ways, and sometimes they'll do it in better ways, and sometimes they won't, but you know, that's how you all learn and move forward.
What were some of the challenges you faced early on? Because obviously you had multiple degrees that were not in the technology field. Kind of taking a hobby and trying to get a little bit more professional about it and trying to land a job. I'm sure you had some challenges. What were some of those challenges and how did you get through those?
I did. It was funny. When I started at T-Visions, so T-Visions was a very small company here in Boston that later became Molecular, was a much bigger company, and then became Isobar, or was acquired by Isobar. They're still around. It's still a big firm, and I know a bunch of people there, and they're great. When I started, they were more traditional. They had this, you have to have a degree in computer science. So they wouldn't hire me as a developer, even though I thought of myself as a developer. So I started out as a content specialist, which was kind of a polite way of saying, you know, you have this degree, but we have no idea what you can actually do. And I did HTML production, right? And I spent, you know, a couple of years as a front-end developer, really just kind of honing my chops. And you guys remember the days of, like, when Ajax was a new thing and you know, I spoke at Ajax World and sort of grew up in that side.
Web 2.0 was taken off.
Yeah, and then reached the point where I went to the folks at Molecular at that point and said, I want to switch into engineering. I'm tired of being in this front-end world.
Yeah.
want to do back-end stuff. And they let me because they knew me and they knew what I was capable of, and they sort of by that point were over the you have to have this kind of degree. But along the way, I actually went back and got another master's in information systems so that at least I had some of those, like, you know, database normalization and sort of algorithms and scaling and just some of the, like, core stuff that as a self-taught developer you can figure out on your own through a lot of mistakes, or you can have somebody sit you down and walk you through, like, the full network stack and what happens at each layer and how to normalize a database and how to tell when an algorithm is going to scale linearly or exponentially or, you know, hit bad performance. So I did go back and get kind of a techie degree, though it's still information systems, not comp sci, but that made it a lot easier to sort of take that question off the table so that as I was getting hired for more senior roles, like directors of engineering and that kind of role, I could say, well, I do have this, you know, I do have some credential that shows that I have
a few degrees. Here's the stack of
exactly. You want to see my student loan bill? That's actually even more impressive.
I do not want to see that bill, sir. That would scare me.
Yeah.
It's really cool to see. Not only did you get in there, but you also knew there were some shortfalls in what you knew and what you understood. So you kind of said, hey, I need to go back, or, you know, along the same lines, it sounds like you did that as you were working. But you went back and got that degree, so you could kind of master that set of skills.
Yeah, and I think these days, you know, I mean, being a self-taught developer is a fantastic thing. I'm all for it. Obviously, I was one myself and still think of myself that way. These days, there's so much with, like, MOOs and online courses and other kinds of things you can do. I'm not even sure that these days I would have gone back for the master's degree. I think
it just didn't exist back then. It just wasn't there. There's so many free resources out there. You're right. That's a great point. Yeah, so let's kind of progress through your career. So you've gotten to tech. You start on the front end. You've kind of stepped up and said you want to get more back end development. So you're working your way, through that. You know, you're into open source. At what point did you first get exposed to WordPress? Where was that first? And I'm gonna guess it was probably about a blog, but maybe not.
Yeah.
When was that first time that WordPress you first heard of it and started?
Yep. Circa kind of late 2004, mid 2004. The firm Molecular was developing these industry practice groups, which is kind of like, you know, so we'll have a bunch of consultants who, in addition to knowing technology, know a little bit about healthcare or retail or financial services, kind of vertical stuff, right? And so I was charged with leading kind of this internal information sharing, knowledge leadership thing around these verticals and these practice groups. And I said, oh, blogs are the perfect thing for this, right? It's 2004, so it was still a little early for the Web 2.0 thing. It was just kind of about to happen. Mm-hmm. So everybody was excited about that, but they wanted them internal only because we weren't quite yet at the point where it was okay for your consultants to be learning in public and admitting what they didn't know, right? It still felt a little too invasive. Like now you would just, that stuff would all be public and it would be okay, but then it still felt a little. So I had to pick a platform. So I looked at WordPress. This is probably version 1.2. If I look at the release history, that's probably about
early 2004 or sometime. Yeah. 2004.
So yeah. It was pretty early, right? So
WordPress you're not supposed to look at the version release history. We're supposed to try to guess based on the...
Okay. Well, I won't tell you the next one. That one I looked up, but I won't tell you the next one. But so I looked at... So instead I chose movable type, right? That was when they were still under an open source license, and so that was an easier kind of thing to pick. And so we were on movable type for a while. Fast forward 2006, I had joined a company called Aptaros. Aptaros was from the Latin optare, to have choices. It was an open source company from the beginning. That was the whole point of the company's existence, so I sort of felt more comfortable. And I went there to be a practice director in what they called Next Generation Internet, which was kind of the whole Web 2.0 thing. So these were going to be public, et cetera. So I started my own blog, and that point when I went back and redid the evaluation, this is now May 2006. At that point, I picked WordPress. So now you can tell me what version that would have been. Mid 2006.
Well, I know that was definitely pre the 2.7 revamp. So I'm gonna guess that was probably around 2. No, actually, I started in 2006. That was like 2.2, 2.3 time frame. That was right around when tags first came out. Just to put it in perspective.
It was. Yep. And it was. There was a long cycle there from 2.0 to 2.1. That was like. Feels like it was like 9 months or something. There was a really long kind of dead period there, I think.
A year, it kind of got stagnant. That's for when I first kind of started getting to WordPress. I just remember that tags were like the brand new feature everybody's excited about. And looking back, it seems silly, but at the time, it was pretty big deal.
It was a big deal. That was the era of the Folksonomy and all that. It was a big trend. So I started kind of doing WordPress stuff then as just a user, and went to actually BarCamp here in Boston, which is another conference that I've been involved in organizing, and saw some great talks there that were inspiring. Kind of 2007 into 2008, I started actually working on a plugin. So there's a plugin called WP Book, which was an early kind of Facebook WordPress integration plugin. Mm-hmm. It had been started by the guys at ScholarPress, Dave Lester and others. They had taken it to kind of a 0.7 version. I had just started hacking on it and sending them patches, and this was pre-GitHub, so you know I was sending them diffs and SVN and whatever. Ended up taking it over and rewriting it completely through sort of 1.0 into 2.0 and even into 3.0 and releasing that. Started then giving talks about that plugin and sort of what I learned from building it and what I did wrong and what I did right and all that. And that got me into the WordCamp community. So then I got accepted to give a talk at WordCamp New York in 2009. And seeing that WordCamp New York was coming up, looking around at all the other conferences I'd been to Boston and looking at this thing called a WordCamp that I'd never been to but I knew existed, I just decided I'm going to have WordCamp Boston. So there's never been one in Massachusetts. It doesn't exist. I'm going to have one, right? So I just sent an email to the local meetup and said, we're going to have a WordCamp Boston. It's going to be in January. I picked a date and a venue and just announced it. I had no idea there was a foundation. Well, there wasn't a foundation yet, but...
No, that was early on for... I mean, you know, WordCamp started a few years before that, but I feel like 2009 is when they really started to, like, pick up.
So the existence of the foundation was actually announced at WordCamp Boston the first year. So this was all, you know, 9 months before that.
I was at that WordCamp. Might have been the first. I can't remember if we met in New York, but I know sure we met in Boston.
Exactly. I think we did meet in Boston that fall or whatever.
I remember that announcement. That was a big deal.
But so, you know, somebody emailed me and was like, you know, you're really supposed to check first with this calendar to make sure you're not competing with other people. And I was like, all right, well, whatever. January 21st, nobody's having a WordCamp in the middle of winter in the Northeast, right? So how bad could it be? And so WordCamp New York 2009, Jake, Amanda Bloom, and I met actually at WordCamp New York to start the planning for WordCamp Boston, which ended up happening in January the following year. So that actually was sort of the start of WordCamp Boston. It was the start of me really professionally investing time in the WordPress community in a different way. It was also where I met Jake. So all of it kind of is a little bit the pre-story of how I ended up at 10 Up, really. But,
and that was one of the coldest WordCamps ever, if I'm not mistaken.
That was...
I'm looking at the notes we have here.
Yep.
January in Boston is such a beautiful... Yep. It is pretty, but it's cold as shit, I'll tell you that.
I don't know if you guys know Micho, Michael Earlywine. He was at Automattic for a while. He wrote the A-B testing plugin, right? So he gave the like intro talk the second year, and he pointed out with a little graph, the first year we had it was the coldest day that year, right? It was January 21st in Boston. We gave away scarves and long-sleeve shirts. The second year we had it was mid-July, and it was the hottest day that year. It was like 95, and
Mitchell would be the guy that would find that. Yes.
Oh, he's got the numbers. That guy.
He wouldn't let me live it down.
So I won't forget that WordCamp because I remember January 2010. I think I'd only spoken at maybe two WordCamps. That might have been my second or third, but I remember it vividly because I'm a big Colts fan, and the Colts and Patriots have an interesting history, and it was. The Colts and Patriots had a playoff game that Sunday, and I was speaking on Saturday. So my entire presentation was laced with Colts horseshoes, and I made the audience count how many there were. And then if you get the right guess, then you won something. I think a book or something. But I got a lot of boos for that. But I think overall it was a fun presentation.
So I am no major sports fan, but I do believe the last couple of Patriots Colts games have not gone the way you wanted.
That's no bueno. So, we'll see. Playoffs are yet to come, but anyways. So let's move on. We got a lot to talk about still, and we definitely want to get in the 10 Up phase. So you've been working at these companies, and I can't remember exactly when you joined 10 Up. So maybe you can kind of walk us through that history. It's been a little while now, and you were brought in as the CEO of 10 Up.
I was. So the last kind of 4 or 5 years, whatever it's been since 2010. You know, Jake left the place that he was at and went off and started 10 Up. I was at Aptaros and then went on to iSight, which is a great firm run by some friends of mine out of Portland, Oregon, with an office here in Boston. I was running their Boston office. Jake and I would keep in touch. We'd run into each other at conferences. We'd have dinner and talk about some of the challenges he was seeing in the business and how fast they were growing and how to kind of scale and what some of those challenges were. And I'd give him advice. And I mean, it was legitimately just like two friends chatting about what's going on at work and what's working well and what's not. And as we sort of had that conversation over the years, we just kind of figured out that we worked really well together. We had a good give and take. We challenged each other in the right ways, but also were open to listen and learn from each other. And you know, I had a lot of respect for what TenUp was doing. But it was kind of too small, frankly, to have kind of, you know, a lot of top-heavy leadership, and it just didn't feel like it was at the place in its evolution where it needed more executive support, right? Or
this sounds vaguely familiar, Brad. I'm just...
Yeah. It may or may not be like other pairings in the industry. Yeah, but so... The long story short, I was pushing iSight to move more into open source software. Frankly, they do a lot of site core development and a lot of .NET development, and you know, they were open to the open source world, but I'm an impatient guy, and I wanted them to go from 0 to 60 in a month, and that just wasn't going to happen. And so,
now they're forced into it with .NET being open source. So.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Welcome to the game, baby. Source,
but yeah. But so, you know, I sort of started a conversation with Jake about kind of is TenUp at that point now, and we talked about it for a couple of months and then agreed to have me come on board. So I joined as CEO just back in March of this year, so I think formally was announced in mid-March, but it's been a great, exciting thing. You know, the team is absolutely lean in, charge hard, right? Don't let growth be a barrier to success, to taking on projects that we want to take on. You know, we're running hard and fast at a target, which I really like. Some people prefer a more lean back lifestyle business. TenUp is not that for me or for Jake or for anybody on our leadership team. It's a let's really have an impact and go for it and try to own it, right? And I really respect that. We've had our challenges as companies do growing as fast as we do. So figuring out, there's a quote I like to use from Mario Andretti who said, if you don't feel like the whole car is falling apart, you're not driving fast enough, right? and we kind of joke back and forth about that. Like we don't want things to be painful for employees as we grow. We want processes to be clear and everything, but sometimes if the choice is slow down or get it right, then, you know, we're going to keep moving and we're going to try to fix it as we go, right? So we're not going to like freeze hiring for 6 months while we figure out how to improve our onboarding or something. We put out something that's good enough, and then we incrementally improve it as we go, and that's just really kind of been inspiring to me to see us keep doing that.
Yeah, I think it's been fun to watch from outside looking in. I always kind of view TenUp, and a lot of people joke, you know, TenUp, WES, big competitors, blah, blah, blah. And to be honest, we have a lot of history together. Like, we've been friends long before our companies, you know, were competitors in any sense of the word. And I've always really respected TenUp because it's a company that was born from the community and is very passionate about the community. And that goes a long way with me. And I think, you know, anybody in this community, that goes a long way with. There's other companies in the community that aren't necessarily that way. But TenUp is definitely one of them. And I've always respected that. So I think it was really neat to kind of see when you were brought on as a CEO. I really was watching closely because, you know, we're not the size of TenUp, but we are a larger agency around WordPress. Mm-hmm. And it's always neat when someone like Jake can kind of take a step back and look at what they're doing and make the decision like, you know what, I'm not the right person to be to be doing this at the top level. You know what I mean? I need to bring in someone that can focus on that so I can do these other things. And it's a very hard call to make because when you found a company, from day one, you have your hands in everything. And you do it because you love it and you're passionate about it. So to be able to take a step back and let go of some things and trust your team and trust your people, and you absolutely should be able to do this. But to be able to do that, I think it's
growth,
right? I mean, it's cool to see.
I think I give Jake a lot of credit for that. And not just, I mean, obviously bringing me in was kind of a visible thing in the community, but you know, folks who know TenUp will know Jess Jurek and Vaskin Hari, who are our two VPs who are part of our executive team, and know that they've been there all along as well and also entrusted to run huge parts of the business. And, you know, our directors, folks like Helen and Paul Clark, who you know, and I'm going to get in trouble for not naming everybody, Taylor, Zach, et cetera. You know, There
are, it, you can't everybody be here all night. So you exactly.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really realistically think you're going to name the entire internet one dragon.
No, I was just going to name just our director team, but even that starts to feel big at this point. But, you know, we have a really strong leadership team. So I kind of feel like, you know, sometimes people will ask, somebody asked me when I first started, like, what's your 3-month plan? I was like, I don't have a plan to come in and try to mess with things. I want to find what's working and make that stronger and find the things that aren't working well and smooth those edges. But 10UP's not broken. I'm not coming in to fix anything. And Jake's not going anywhere. He and I still talk every day. He's very much involved in the day-to-day running of the company. And we as an executive team all are very highly collaborative. So it's not, you know, I know you didn't mean it that way, but like taking a step back, yes, sure. It's the visibility of that. But it's still also very much actively Jake and I, along with Justin Baskin, running the firm.
We got to know, you and Jake one-on-one, he's wearing the jacket, isn't he? He's wearing the jacket. Please don't spit beer all over your computer, but he is, right? You could just tell
sometimes
us.
I think he composes emails while wearing the jacket, even when nobody's watching.
But I would. I totally would. But
I'd have to rock some flip-flops with that. I'd have to do it.
I did. When he came to WordCamp Boston this year, I had to be like, we need to coordinate because we're going to be standing next to each other at the booth all day, and I do not want to be twinsies because I have a very similar jacket, right? I don't know.
No twinsies. That's great. So a couple questions we got to get through. So first and foremost, is 10UP hiring?
Yes.
Just want to clear the air.
If there was any confusion, we are always looking for qualified people. And Jake has spoken about this on podcast before that, you know, we don't want lack of available staff to be a barrier to taking on the kind of projects we want to take on. So, you know, it's a hard balancing act because you never want to lower your standards to hire, and we wouldn't do that, and we're going to maintain high quality. But we also don't ever want to say to a prospect that we really wanted to work with, hey, we can't work with you because we don't have the staff, right? Mm-hmm. We can't work with you right now. You need to wait 8 weeks. Those are conversations you can have, but just plain no is not an option we ever want to be at, right? So in order to do that, you have to really constantly be hiring. You have to constantly be thinking about where is our next talent pool coming from. And Paul Clark's, our director of recruiting, has done a fantastic job this year of making that a bit more predictable and a bit less ad hoc. But it's still, you know, it's kind of like you never turn off sales in a growing agency, right? Because even if you've been 2 months not selling, it's going to take you 6 months to catch up from that.
It's pretty impressive. I mean, 10UP started in 2010?
2011.
So we're talking, you know, give or take 3 years plus. Yeah,
just over 3 years.
And you guys, what's the official count right now? Where are we at?
So we're 90 plus as of this week, if you count folks who are starting later this month. Back in May, I said I thought we'd end the year at 90 and internally, and some folks thought I was overestimating, but I think we'll actually hit the end of the year at 95 or 100.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And, you know, like I said, a lot of the community thinks we have this kind of back and forth, and we do in a friendly manner, I think, anyways. It's a lot of fun. So I think any growth in the community is good for everybody, right? And I've never felt like 10UP, WDS, and a lot of other companies. I never thought like competitors because this is not a cutthroat community. We're very friendly with each other. So it's 10UP growth, I think, is freaking amazing. I'm very happy for everything you guys are doing. Couldn't be happier with what you got going on over there. I still don't have a footage, but that's cool. I mean,
I think it's the joy of the WordPress community is that we can you know, collaborate on the infrastructure and compete on the implementations. Like, I love it when you guys put out a site that's fantastic and we can look at it and go, wow, that's really cool, or a plugin or a, you know, anything.
It's validating what we're doing across the board, right?
Exactly. It's all, there's more work than any of us could possibly do.
I would love to see you guys at 200 people by, like, February. Like, that'd be great. No, I mean, joking aside, that type of growth is going to spawn growth for everybody involved. Yeah. I mean, it's a huge, huge win and exciting to see you guys really kicking ass and growing at that pace. It means that others can do it as well, right? If you guys could scale it, why can't anybody else, right?
Yeah, this is great stuff. And that, you know, the great, I guess the good thing and bad thing about the show is we do eventually have to cut off. This is one of those interviews. We talked a little bit before the show, but this is one of the interviews we could dig in for an hour or two because, you know, I know both Dre and I could learn a lot from you and what you've done, but obviously we do have to move on. But before we do, I do have one question. I need to hear about, you have a PhD. I didn't know this before the show. You have a PhD. You do not go by Dr. Ekman. I would love to hear why. I think a lot of people out there don't actually know that you are officially.
It's true. So I've had lots of, earlier on in my career, I've had lots of mentors who were like, you should put, not doctor, but comma PhD on your business cards, because that's really impressive. And I always felt like, A, I don't want to be impressive because I have letters after my name. I want people to be impressed by the conversation they had with me. Like, that's just doesn't seem like putting the right foot forward. And B, it's not in anything that's really related to what I'm doing. I don't have a PhD in WordPress or in web development or in anything like it. It's in American literature and culture, right? So it sort of felt like the wrong fit. But the real reason I don't want to go by Dr. Ekman is because it makes me think my dad's in the room, right? and all my male uncles were MDs, and actually now a huge number of my cousins, male and female, are both doctors Ekman or doctors of one kind or another.
That's amazing. So
I always felt like PhDs, you shouldn't put doctor before your name unless you can cut somebody open legally, right?
legally.
If plane and someone's having a heart attack and they say, is there a doctor on the plane? They don't want to hear me talk about modernist literature. They want somebody who can help save the guy's life, right?
I know WordPress. I'll help. Exactly. No, that's great. I had no idea. So that's, I mean, that's one of the reasons I love this show, because I learned stuff about people I've known for years that I had no idea. So there you have it, folks. Don't call him doctor. John Ekman. So, Dre, man, we got to move on. We got some topics to talk about, so let's get into it.
Awesome.
Word. Pressing.
Topics of the week.
Oh, man, where are we going to start? We got some. We talk about late news weeks. This is not one of them. So there's a couple, quite a few different interesting topics. I think the one we should probably at least touch on first is WordPress 4.1 Beta 1 is out. That was quick.
With distraction writing on by default. Have you seen that?
I have not seen that.
So the whole, you know, the distraction-free writing, the, like, zoom away in the background if you focus, happens automatically now, right, in certain circumstances. And I think that's going to freak a lot of people out.
Well, yeah, what are the circumstances? Because that is going to freak a lot of people out if that just starts happening. They're going to be like, what happened? Right. My web page just disappeared.
So this is where I confess I haven't actually installed it and tried it. But so it's the Focus project, which is, as I understand it,
I'm gonna have to play with it.
Distraction-free writing mode is enabled by default. So ordinarily you had to hit full screen to go out into distraction-free writing mode. As I understand it, in this 4.1 beta 1, it just comes on when you're editing in a post and you start focusing in on the editor and you're not touching the other stuff.
I have a sound effect just for that. Yeah, that I don't know about that.
It's one of those. I think it's an interesting experiment. Like, you know, distraction-free writing itself kind of freaks people out sometimes when they see
it. So with this, I mean, this is something that maybe should go into one of those core plugins, right? Like you test out and see how it's kind of working before you push this into core. I think I don't know that I'm a big fan of the distraction-free stuff as it lies now. So. More so throwing it in my face, I think that might be a challenge.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's such a in-your-face visual feature. To turn something like that on by default, just to me, initially, doesn't make a lot of sense. Because, I mean, I'm sure you do, John, and over at 10UP and us at WDS, we work with a lot of novice users. You know, like, the normal at, you know, create new post screen can be confusing, let alone everything just starts to disappear as they're writing. They're like, what the hell's going on? So we're going to keep close tabs on that, because that's interesting. I'd be honestly, I'll say it now, I'd be surprised if that sticks for 4.1. That sounds pretty tricky.
Yeah, I think that it reminds me of the old revision compare bug where you could compare two revisions to themselves and you'd fall into the time warp or whatever. And like that, people thought that they had been hacked, right? Like,
what happened?
Stumble at that. By
does that still exist? Did they actually take that out?
Well, if you think about how revisions changed in 3.6, you can't, because it's a slider now, you can't actually get in that situation.
It was removed by default because of the UI change. Yeah, gotcha. I always kind of like that stuff. I understood what people said about that. It did, you know, if you accidentally did that, you'd be like, oh, God, what did I do? But we'll see. So other additions of 4.1, we have the new 2015 default theme, which is included. So if you want to check that out and you haven't, 2015 is actually inside of 4.1 beta 1.
It's a welcome change in my book. I think I like where it's the simplification behind it, and certainly I understand that the idea behind the themes being bundled is really to show the capabilities from a different view or a different perspective than what you might see in a regular theme. I just wasn't a huge fan of 2014 personally. The new one's going to be something that I'm stoked with.
I think I would agree. 2014, if you configured everything correctly, was pretty beautiful, but nobody ever configures everything correctly, right? So they're just going to kind of use it as the default state, and in the default state, it doesn't look that great. It looks a little bit clunky.
So, all I can say is they're all a hell of a lot better than Kubrick.
Yeah, shush. Yeah, you can't.
They've all been better. I would love to see it. I might even actually blog about this. I might, because I really think it'd be a cool idea. I would love to see one of the new themes be a kind of a community voted on type of design concept. And I'm not just saying have an open poll for anybody, because that's not going to work. We know the internet. That won't work, right? But only allow people one vote if they've ever contributed a single line of code in the core. You get one vote, period. And then allow the theme team to pick maybe their top 10 concepts that are submitted, and those will be what everybody votes on. So it's a little bit of a controlled vote, so we don't get some kind of like crazy theme that is terrible that nobody wants, just to someone wants to be funny on Reddit, you know? But I think it would be fun to get the community involved, because a lot of these themes we've seen have been kind of run by people on the automatic side, and it doesn't sound like that's anything official. It's just what's happened. So it'd be fun to get the community involved in this a little bit more from the start. But a lot of cool stuff. It's I got to be honest, 4.1, it seemed like it came quick for me, like it's here. And I understand they're trying to get this out in December, I think, is the launch date. But 12.10
was the original date.
Yeah, it's like, wow, we're already here looking at 4.1 beta, so it's right around the corner. So get on the testing. This is a great time if you're looking to contribute to WordPress you've never done it before. Helping look for bugs. If you can submit bugs, test out 4.1 beta. It's a really easy
one. So I will actually have my first code contribution to WordPress Core in 4.1.
Hey, yo.
Now we're talking.
Unless something breaks after, but I did get a patch in WordCamp San Francisco.
CEOs can get props, man.
It may only be one line of code, but it's every line helps, right?
No line of codes, that's for sure.
Great. And it's such a great feeling when you get props. You know you're going to be in the list. It's just a really cool feeling. So if you're looking to contribute, there's a lot of ways to do it. But when you hit beta, it's a great way to get in there and just help find bugs. That's an awesome way to contribute. So check it out, WordPress 4.1. You can download it, install it, play with it, see what you think, provide feedback. Another big piece of news, I think it's pretty big. WP eCommerce. Have you guys seen this? They're rebranded. They're renaming. They're fresh coat of paint. I kind of like what we're doing here. What do you think, Dre?
Well, I commend them for continuing forward. I mean, I think a lot's changed in the marketplace. They revamped the whole code base. Now they've rebranded. I'm a fan. I hope that this brings them newfound success and they can continue driving, innovating the product. For a long time, it seemed to just kind of push to the bottom as you saw growth in Woo, even Shop and some of the other platforms that were out there. So it's good to see kind of a revived energy on their front, and I commend them on it.
Yeah, WP e-commerce is like the old school WordPress e-commerce. I mean, when I got into WordPress in 2006, this was like, I think, one of the only e-commerce options there was. So you can that just kind of states how old it was. It was before that when they first started, and they already had a pretty big user base at that point. So I got to be honest, I really like the direction they're going. I never understood the Get Shopped branding. It was very confusing to me, especially since there's a e-commerce plugin called Shop with two P's. It was confusing. Like, and I feel like a lot of the users were confused by it. Like, they didn't really understand what it meant. So I think their branding alone is going to be big for them.
Like, there was always something to me about Get Shopped that made it sound like an insult, kind of, right? Like Get Lost or something. I mean, I understood what they were after, but it didn't quite.
Yeah, it was odd. And they've been doing that for a few years now, right? It didn't make a lot of sense. So I think the refresh is good. I mean, they've spent a lot of time over the years going through their code, scrubbing it, cleaning it up, making it better. It was clunky in the past. There's still parts of it that probably are clunky, but they have spent a lot of time cleaning it up, making it more extendable, making it cleaner, faster, more optimized, secure. So if you haven't touched it in a while, go back, take a look at it, give it another shot. I think it's in a pretty good spot right now. Obviously, WooCommerce, I think, is the top dog in the space. I don't think there's any argument. But I think, WP eCommerce could easily be a number two. I mean, I think they got a lot of good stuff going on. And this rebrand, I think, is a step in the right direction.
Yeah, there's plenty of room in this space for a number of winners, right? It doesn't have to be just one.
I mean, we can look at where the energy went, right? For a while, maybe they're spread a little thin. Focus was a little bit challenged. They were doing some gaming components and some other things that could have really distributed resources in a way that prohibited them from growing in this direction clearly in time past. So looks like they've regrouped and shoot. There's definitely room for more than one player in the space. So I commend them being old heads on the block, kind of returning. It's kind of exciting to see that again. That renewed energy.
Yeah, there is, and they have a new beta out for 3.9. Beta 1 is out, so you're right, Dre. It's not just the redesign, the refresh. They got a beta of the latest version out. They have a roadmap for the next two or three versions. You're right. Something's happening here, and I think we need to take note and keep an eye on it because I feel like they're primed to make a pretty big comeback, and I think it's a good time to do it. So hats off to that team. They're all really good people and some really amazing devs over there with Justin.
Justin's so awesome. Yeah.
So that's good pretty friends. Cool.
I wonder if they're prepared for all the times they're going to have to explain lowercase e, capital C.
Probably already
they've been down that path, but it's tough when you have a company whose name is spelled in an unusual way, as Eyesight Design learned. But
oh man, let's talk about some funding.
Uh-oh, show me the money.
Dre's favorite money. Sound effect.
Show me the money. How much you charging? Not enough. Raise your prices.
All right, I don't know where we're going, but take it away, Dre. What are we talking about here?
I don't even know. Well, I mean, Clef. Have you guys heard of Clef? It's a dual authentication capable plugin or service.
We interviewed Brennan, one of the founders of Clef in San Francisco. If you watch our San Francisco clips,
WordCamp. Right, and these guys, I mean, really, really cool way to kind of replace the whole ideology behind password usage in as a login mechanism, and it works really well with WordPress. Two-factor authentication, and I think they do it really well, and they took on a round. It looks like they took on a pretty big round, $1.6 million from some pretty decent-sized investors, Murado Ventures, a group of angels that, at the pace that they're growing, I mean, maybe it makes sense for them. What do you guys think about the move? I mean, we're seeing this a lot more in the space. We're seeing a lot of these mergers, these acquisitions, capital injection at early stage, even second, third round. So it's something that we didn't see 2-3 years ago in the WordPress space. Now we're seeing it like we're talking about or multiple organizations. It's like weekly. So where's this going? What does this mean for Clef?
It means very good things for Clef, I think. They just got a nice infusion of money so they can really sit down and work this out. I mean, to my knowledge, we talked to Brennan at WordCamp San Fran. We interviewed him. Check the clip out on our website. To my knowledge, they were kind of just doing this on the side. I mean, it wasn't a paid service. It was a completely free service. It seemed like something where they were volunteering their time. And maybe I don't know everything that's going on, but outside looking in, that's what I saw. So an injection of money means that they can actually, you know, work on this full time. They can bring in people that need to be brought in. They can really dedicate themselves to this project, which, I mean, on the security front lines is a great project, right? It's securing websites. It's making logins more secure. It's getting rid of passwords, which sounds crazy. But if you go to getclef.com, getclef.com, they have a video. And when you actually see how it works, it's pretty freaking amazing. I'm excited for them. I'm really anxious to see where this goes.
Well, talking away from the technology a second, just thinking about the total amount that was injected there, and probably, you know, I've got my suspicions on what that the dilution was there. Man, that's a pretty good valuation for the amount of customers that they currently have and kind of where the state of the company is. So that should give them some pretty good firepower for a bit here. To continue growing this thing, I like it. I think it's a good way to think about your security, your login credentials. We've moved away from a lot of the issues that we've seen in the past in terms of updates and stuff. Even in WordPress core, we've minimized that with point releases and security and maintenance releases having automatic update capabilities. Where we've lacked in the past is credentials management, and that's not a problem that the three of us are going to run into all the time, but our end users, 60 million blogs and 24% of the internet, a high percentage of that, are still not managing passwords properly. So when we take that out of the equation and we're starting to use two-factor authentication as a de facto standard, now we're on to something. Right now we're putting security into a more proactive state, and that in itself is just going to help the internet as a whole. So I think they've positioned themselves really good in a place, not just in WordPress, but in security in general. The two pieces that I think security needs to kind of really be or drive home is one, the two factor, so credential management and then security at the edge. Really thinking away from your service, stopping those attacks before they ever get there. Those two work in hand. They're in a hot spot. I hope the best for them.
Can tell
anything we can do to kill passwords, I'm on board with.
I'm sorry?
Anything we can do to kill passwords, I'm happy
with. I'm with you on that. Yeah, that's no-brainer.
And just to correct what I said, there is a free option, which unlimited users and unlimited logins, but there's also a paid tier for business. So there is some money coming in at the business level. But I'm excited. We'll keep an eye on that. Hopefully maybe we can get Brennan on one of these days.
I'd love it.
Have him formally host the show.
I also like that their blog announcing it invited everybody to their 67th weekly community dinner in Oakland. So if you're in Oakland, you can go.
Hey,
say hi, but they'll have a good dinner that night.
Yeah, that'll be a great dinner. As someone said in the chat, they'll be driving up in their new Teslas. All right. Oh, boy. Yeah, kudos to them, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's really cool. And again, it's growing the community, right? More money, more jobs, more everything. It's great to see it across the board.
Well, I'll tell you what, this has been a really killer time. I'd like to hear a couple tips from you guys. So if we can get into this week's bar tricks, that'd be awesome.
Let me show you a bar trick.
All right, John. John, I got to give it to you, big guy. I'd love to hear where you're going with this.
So my bar trick is actually a plugin called Responsive Page Tester. There's a couple of different plugins like it in the repo, but this one I think has the best kind of user experience. And this is actually, so I gave a lightning talk at WordCamp San Francisco that was about getting outside the WordPress bubble. One of the things that I really liked that Sitecore does, which is a proprietary content management system, is they built this responsive page preview into Sitecore back in the last release.
Nice.
Let somebody be working on a page or a post, and they've built something complex in the page or post, and they want to see what it looks like. It does what a lot of those other responsive page testing sites do on the web, but the interface is just really nicely done to be able to say, I want to see what this thing is going to look like on a small phone, on a big phone, on a tablet, on a big desktop. And shows it to you in your theme in a sized window so that you can kind of make sure that you haven't broken your responsive design with some bad content like content editors are prone to doing on occasion.
That is a damn slick plugin. I love it.
There are so many plugins. Like almost every bar trick that's a plugin, it's a really cool plugin that I have not heard of.
Yeah, that's amazing, dude.
It's amazing, right? It's so cool.
Oh, yeah. I got nothing after that. Jeez.
Oh, man. Well, I have something.
Well, I'm saving you for last. I'm going a different direction. I want to talk. I want to talk ticket systems. We all use them in some capacity. One that's gained popularity, especially at smaller mid-range shops, is Help Scout. We use also some internal communication mechanisms. We've seen the change from IRC on the WordPress project. Internally, we use HipChat. So along with that, it's an exciting place to be if we can get all those tickets, all those updates, so we get a better and quicker view of all the changes happening in our ticket system right inside of our HipChat mechanism. So we're piping in Help Scout right into HipChat, and they've got a native connector for this right on their website. So when you get a chance, if you're a Help Scout user, go check it out. They've got connections for a bunch of other stuff, right? So like Slack, so if you're using the same stuff that the WordPress project's using, you've got that capability there. If you're doing live chat on your site using something like OLARC, you can integrate all that stuff right into your system. So good stuff.
You're giving the competition everything that we do, man. I'm telling
That's
you.
That's great. What so we talk about too. We don't use Help Scout, but all the HipChat integrations, like we have ones that are triggered out of Beanstalk, that are triggered out of command line WPCLI migrations that then tell you in HipChat when they're done. It's just a fantastic thing to bring everything together into one place.
Oh, yeah.
We built a really stupid out integration that anytime you hashtag WDS chat, it pushes to a WordPress blog with whatever it was we're saying.
That's dangerous.
Look for that. That's a lot of fun. No, that's very cool. So I have a pretty cool bar trick, and it's brought to you from this interesting company called TenUp, and they've released their engineering best practices.
Hey, I hear they're hiring, by the way, at TenUp.com.
I've heard such rumors.
Pull requests are accepted on the engineering best practices, which is a good way to show us how good you are.
Please, get in there, because let me tell what it is, and I'll tell you why I love it. So basically, best practices. So the team at TenUp, the monster team that you guys have over there, have put together over, it sounds like a series of months, kind of collaborated on a way you documented your engineering practices and why. So it's all up on GitHub, and what's really cool is, I mean, you're documenting everything, performance, security, design patterns, unit tests, structure, workflows, templates, modular code, dependencies. I mean, the list goes on and on. This is amazing. You're literally like giving out your trade secrets here with some of this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the way we look at it, right, they're not secrets. I mean, they're best practices in the community.
This is what we're all about. I mean,
yeah, we've already had a number of great pull requests that are actually really helpful. That
I love it. It's all on GitHub. Pull requests accepted. I love the fact that you guys are taking what you've learned over the years and how you work and saying this is what we do and opening it up. In other professions, other communities, this is not normal. You know, you don't do this. You don't put this out to the world and say this is what we're doing and this is why and this is why you should. And that's one of the reasons I love this community, because this is what we are doing. You guys are putting out some amazing stuff. This is gold. You know, this is awesome information. Not just from, it doesn't matter what level you're at, the enterprise level all the way down to the individual freelancer working on, you know, smaller blogs. I mean, everybody can learn from this. So it's really cool you guys put this out. Hopefully, you know, the community, you know, rallies around it and really like helps, you know, pull requests and make this the best resource we can make it so we can all use it as best as we can. So it's really cool. If you haven't had the chance, check it out. We'll have a link in the show notes. A lot of really cool information in here. So definitely check it out. How do you like that, Mike? And props to John. I didn't have a bar trick. So you heard that, Jake. You got me to do a ton of bar trick.
Far be it from the CEO to suggest a bar trick from his own company.
I called you a CEO when you told me to use it as a bar trick. So, but that is a good resource. I'm glad you brought that up because I saw it and I think it slipped by. I forgot to mention it. So really, really cool stuff.
All awesome stuff and pretty exciting and exciting. I'll be at WordCamp Las Vegas here in a couple weeks. We've got WordSesh 3, which if you haven't heard of WordSesh, please. It's an all online conference. It's 24 hours of just the most amazing smart people in WordPress giving you presentations about varying topics from you know, working on a repo to business to you name it as it relates to WordPress. WordSesh.com. You need to go check it out. Go sign up. I think that we released the registration in the last couple of days. We've got over 300 signups already within a couple of days. It's
100% free, 100% online.
Yeah, and so, if you miss it, that's on you. 24 hours of awesome.
24 hours, so no matter where you are, some of it will be inconvenient to your local time zone.
This is fact, but that's why we record it, and we put it up online and make it available for people afterwards.
There's always a handful that stay up the whole 24. So if you're in it for the marathon, you got to be in that chat room from the start, and we'll have a little side room for the people that are going from start to finish.
There should be a special shirt or something.
Yeah.
The group grows every year, so I wouldn't be surprised if we have quite a few people this year.
Oh, man. Well, beginning of the year, we got Pressnomics 3, January 22nd through the 24th. That's always a good event. Third one.
Be there.
I think we'll all be there. So we'll get to hang out a little bit in January. PrestigeConf coming up a month after that in Las Vegas, February 27th through the 28th. Another cool event. I know that Brad will be speaking, and I'll also be attending there. Folks, LoopConf, we talked about last week. They're releasing tickets, I believe, as early as tomorrow. So if you're interested in attending or finding out more, go check it out at LoopConf. Any special events coming up that you're attending, John?
So I'll be at Prestige as well. Jake and I are both speaking there, and we'll be at Pressnomics, though I'm not speaking there, but excited to hang out. I haven't been to the other two Pressnomics, so.
That's back-to-back months. We're going to get really tired of each other.
I know.
It'd be good.
It's a struggle. I got to have at least one great event every month. You know, that's the way it works.
Well, good deal. It's been a great show. Folks, if you're out there and you're interested on having DragCast attend one of your events, make sure to hit us up on Twitter at DragCast. You can find us on our Facebook page or just hit up Brad or myself at any time. We'd love to talk to you about it. Or send us T-shirts, coffee mugs, all that fun stuff. We'll use it on the show. John, where can people find you?
So best way for me is probably Twitter. It's Jay Ekman or Jekman, just my first initial and last name. Or just check out tenup.com/blog.
Episode 66, this has been awesome. Really appreciate your hat. You know, you're coming on board. Great and dealing.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we hope to have you again soon. Brad, where can we find you, buddy?
Yes, sir. You can find me on Twitter, WilliamsBA.
And I'm at Dre Maida. There's really not much to say other than John is awesome, and this show is damn amazing. I'm really excited to have had the opportunity to talk with you. And if we, folks, if we don't talk again next week, we surely wish you a happy Thanksgiving. For the Rad and Dread, I'm the Doctor. Thanks for joining us on Episode 66 with John Ekman. We're out, baby. Booyah.
Booyah. There you have it, folks, the latest edition of the Dradcast. If you dig the show, make sure you pass it on. If you have content for the show, want to submit to be a guest host, or just want to listen to older episodes, visit the Dradcast website at dradcast.com. While you're there, make sure you click the iTunes subscribe link to catch us on iTunes. Don't forget to follow at Dradcast on Twitter, and we thank you for tuning in. Join Dre and Brad plus some new guest hosts next week.
Yes!
On another episode of the Dradcast. Yeah.